episode 104 of Cracking the Spine. I'm Zane.
I'm already rolling my eyes.
Hey. It's Sean.
It's me too. It's Josh.
No, that's my new name. I'm already rolling my eyes.
Oh, you have like a, what are the, Argonians have names like that. We're talking about Skyrim.
Yeah, I'm being Zane-splained on Skyrim.
Already rolls his eyes this year.
Yeah.
Can breathe underwater. Did you know that about them?
About Argonians?
Yeah.
Yeah, I did know that.
Cool.
Because I've been playing literally nothing but that game for like 5 years.
Dude, I started playing Elder Scrolls Online. It's like drugs to my fucking fragile brain.
Is that the MMORPG?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I joined the Thieves Guild and I was like, holy shit, I'm back!
Nah, no thanks.
Love it.
Stealing
no, I just mean no thanks to the idea of having to play with
having
other people.
Having to play with other people, totally. Yeah.
You don't really have to. You can ignore them.
No, but you have to. They're there.
Mm.
They're a part of your life.
Do it.
Mm. I don't like when other people are a part of my life, Zane and Josh.
Yay!
Finally, we're free.
Best friends club!
I'm just turning into...
I'm in it tonight! She already told you that.
Yep. That's the way it always is.
Everyone's in the best friends club. Listeners, you're in the best friends club.
And the best part is because not of anything that I did, but by default because you were a dick, Josh.
Is that what happened?
Yeah.
Isn't that what happened?
I don't remember.
Well, I'm in the best friends club.
My short-term memory is pretty much gone.
What's that?
What are we talking about?
Zane, what are we talking about? Oh, wait, it's not that part of the show.
Oh, shit.
It's the part where we talk about books.
No, the part where we talk about what we're reading.
What are you reading?
Who are you talking to?
You, Sean.
Well, you were looking at me, but this is an audio podcast.
Well,
so
you could have answered, and then they would have figured it out.
That's true.
Yeah, but I also could have underlined the fact that you don't know how to play by the rules.
That's true. I'm just a rogue podcastman.
I really hope
that frog
is on the podcast.
I need to.
He's right there. Guys, I see him. He's right there.
Guys, we need to talk about this. We are recording in our third
location.
Well, technically not our third location, because we recorded in the bookstore, we recorded in Zane's parents' house.
And we recorded up your butthole once.
We recorded in a moving vehicle.
Yeah, in a car.
Yeah.
And we recorded at Zane's hot house.
This is the cool house.
And now in Waze, this is Zane's house she moved. In Waze, it's called Zane's Summer Palace.
Zane's Summer Palace.
Yeah.
It is, like, very summery here.
Right?
It's very beautifully, we were calling it a mob hideout.
Yeah. It will be completely inaccessible. It's like when the snow falls, it's going to be like the fucking Overlook Hotel.
No,
like,
more Zane. Zane's going to go crazy. She's going to be typing.
That sounds great. That sounds great. Anyway, we're sitting in my little breakfast nook with the windows open, and there's a big frog outside.
Did you just fucking say breakfast nook?
Yeah.
What would you call it?
That's what this
kitchen.
Is.
I would call it a kitchen.
Okay, we're sitting in my kitchen.
There you go.
I mean, this is very clearly a breakfast nook.
I'm going to eat breakfast in here tomorrow, and then, boy, are you going to look like a fool.
Dude, take a picture of it and send it to all of us so we can look how stupid he is.
I'm also thinking that there probably will get some nookie being done. In
That's what I said. I said...
By Sugar Ray.
You guys need to stop talking about...
I said maybe they wanted to, like,
in the kitchen.
Break the house in. You got to, like, do stuff to it.
I never said having sex. I said nookie.
My understanding of it is...
Hugs and snuggling.
Oh, that sounds nice.
And fingering.
Ew, gross, Josh.
Grow up, Josh. What is this, eighth grade?
You have to wash your hands first.
No, you don't.
We should, but then you don't wash them afterwards.
Anyway. Sean, what are you reading?
All right, so last week I was reading The Armored Saint. I think I said I would finish it. Yeah, so it's done.
Wow. Cocky, big...
No, I talked at length about it last week. I don't want to bore the people by reminding them how great it is.
You liked it a lot.
I loved it. It's one of the best fantasy novels I've read in a long time, and the sequel has a release date announced, which is nice because we very often will talk about fantasy series that are a holding pattern.
Mm-hmm.
So I believe if it's a Tuesday, it's October 18th.
Okay.
That the Mike Cole sequel to...
If today is a Tuesday?
No, if the 18th is a Tuesday.
Mm.
Books come out on Tuesdays.
I know that.
Like okay. Like video games.
Yeah.
And
books.
My wiener.
Your wiener only comes out on Tuesdays? You should wash it more often.
Day.
You should wash that more often.
I take him for a walk around the patio.
Do you leash it or can he run free?
Free range.
Free. You don't have a patio.
Free range painter.
He does it on my patio.
Do you have a breakfast nook?
I don't have a breakfast nook.
Yes, he does. We're sitting in it.
I have a greenhouse.
Where does Josh lives with me now.
Where does your wiener eat?
Anywhere I can.
Wait, I wasn't invited to live here.
Outside.
Yeah, I live outside.
I'm we can't man. All be inside at once. There's no room.
We are conflating a lot of issues here, you guys. So I finished The Armored Saint. Super great. Lots of twists.
So what's the next? What comes out on October 18th?
The sequel. Which is called, I can't remember the title. I could look it up, but I'm not going to right now.
The Naked Saint.
It's not.
The Moderately Clothed Saint.
The Naked Saint.
No, it's like the Queen of something.
: All Dicks Day.
Anyway, so then I decided to reread a novel that I read only when it first came out that I love. And rereading it reminds me of why I love it.
You don't do rereads very often.
I don't do rereads very often.
I try not to reread.
And it's funny because if you've read this book, so the book is The Ocean at the End of the Lane by Neil Gaiman.
Okay.
Which is...
Frog likes it.
It's a fantasy, but I would say it's low fantasy.
Like that, what's low fantasy? Jesus.
The world that we live in with like fantastical elements behind the bread jar or the
magic and ghosts, but centered in like reality somehow.
And like a lot of it's about childhood, so it's like the kinds of things you believe in when you're a kid.
I used to believe that there was the Ninja Turtles lived in the sewer behind my Nana's house.
They probably did.
Oh,
I wanted them to so badly.
But it's funny, like, the main character of The Ocean at the End of the Lane, like, it's kind of like a, like Bioshock Infinite, like that, like, that quantum story that keeps happening over and over and That's over cool. again, but the storyteller doesn't remember it.
Right.
And as I'm reading it, like, I'm like 100 pages in, and I'm like, I don't remember any of this.
Oh, yeah.
So it's like, I know it. Like I knew the ending, but I forgot everything in the middle, which feels like pretty apropos of reading that book.
Okay, fair enough.
So I finished that, and now I'm back on the James Comey A Higher Loyalty, which is, you know, I'm not usually a big fan of cops, and I'm not usually a big fan of biographies.
Yeah, cops aren't my favorite either.
But James Comey seems like a pretty decent guy. Like, for, as far as federal prosecutors go and directors of the FBI, I mean, I don't have much of a basis of comparison. I you know, the character
Skinner from The X-Files.
Yeah.
You don't like him?
No, I was going to go with
in the beginning.
The J. Edgar Hoover in Public Enemies.
I didn't see that.
With Christian Bale and Johnny Depp.
I watched the J. Edgar Hoover DiCaprio movie.
Oh, I didn't watch that one.
It's all right.
Yeah.
It's like, whatever.
Anyway, I love this frog. I really hope this frog is coming across.
I think that's him. That's his big frog noise right there on Josh, the waveform.
Josh is pointing to the waveform. So that's what I'm reading. Let's go to Zane.
Yeah, Zane might have read.
Probably not. She moved.
She moved.
I finished the fifth season.
All right.
Holy shit, it's so good.
Well, I'm summer.
So sorry that it took me forever to read because it is so good.
Can I borrow it?
Flinter.
Yes. It's
Flinter.
Flinter.
Sprottum.
Sprottum.
It's so good. It's like, it surprised me.
Wummer.
It was really good. Like, it was one of those books where the more I kept reading, the more I was like, yo, this is so good. Yo, this is so good. Yo, this is so good. It's awesome.
That's how The Armored Saint is.
Yeah. All right.
Well, so I gotta go get this Armored Saint book after I read
Zane's
book.
And there's more in this series, so I'm excited to read more of those. But I don't know what's up next. Like, I, like, just finished this book.
All right.
Well, what's next is putting your books away. They're all over
I would say
place.
Unpack these fucking boxes and mow the goddamn lawn.
Yeah, mow the lawn.
Okay.
You just moved here. Act like you like it.
Okay.
Or I'll take you back to boarding school so fast, your name isn't Zane Barbara Bauer.
I'm sorry, Dad. I'm sorry, Dad, Josh.
I didn't read,
I shut down.
I saw Solo, the movie.
That counts as, I bet you had to do some reading in the beginning.
There's a little bit of reading in the beginning. There's
a long time ago in a galaxy far, far away.
Well, they do the, like, they don't do the crawl, but they did a, like a...
They don't do the crawl?
No, not for these. They
Spoilers!
Don't do, they didn't do it for Rogue One either.
But Rogue One wasn't very good.
I agree. This was actually very good.
It was very good.
I was shocked. I was...
Josh was, like, raving about it before you got here.
I was shocked.
All right.
I was like, this is going to suck. And then I saw it, and I was like, holy shit, I guess Ron Howard really likes Star Wars, because he made a good Star War.
Is it like every other Ron Howard movie, where, like, a half hour before it's over, you're like, all right, let's go, Ron. Bring it home.
No, it's pretty like, fun the whole time. There's a lot of, like, fun action-y things that happen, and then at the end, it's like heisty, but there's a shock. There's, like, a shocking
moment. Does Chewbacca die?
Yeah, Chewbacca dies, and then it's a different Chewbacca the whole time. It's just, he gets another Chewbacca. Wait,
is it his identical twin brother.
Is it all a fever dream of Chewbacca's?
That's the shocker. That's it.
He wakes up, he's like, and they're like, dude, we don't know what you're saying. You're just growling.
They do a this
sir,
is a spoiler.
Can you please leave the Walmart?
They do a moment where...
No! You really can't. You can't, dude. You can to us when the show is when we're done.
Oh, but they don't want to hear it on the thing.
No, you can't. That's not fair.
But the crawl in the beginning.
That's
was,
not. No, it's not. No, no.
Was, no.
Nope.
Guess we'll do our show now.
All right, let's take a break.
Welcome back to Cracking the Spine. This is episode 104.
We didn't make a number joke.
No, we didn't. 104.
Come on, let's go. Let's go.
Oh,
let's go.
104. That's the captain of every European soccer team plus
what?
Four. The captain's jersey of every US of every European soccer team is 10.
Why do you know that?
I don't know.
What's up with you? You're like soccer now?
I'm like the...
Are you worldly now?
I'm like the Sugar Ray of soccer knowledge.
Nobody knows what that means. Anyway, what are we doing special for today?
We're doing readings. Dramatic readings.
Yeah, we were going back through the archives because we're getting ready to move the fuck away from fucking Podomatic.
Yeah, Podomatic.
So we've been downloading...
Eat my farts!
Getting ready to... File Transfer Protocol, our backlog of shows, and remembering when we used to do dramatic readings.
It's the best.
They were fun.
It's a lot of pressure.
People like them.
Do they?
So we're going to do...
They do.
So this week is going to be a holiday episode.
It's Mem's Day.
It's
Happy Memorial Day.
It's a couple days late.
Yeah.
So, fuck you.
Happy summer season. It's the start of summer.
Oh, yeah. It's the day that the Star Trek Online expansion comes
out.
Go to Ryza. Get on Ryza. Put your Horgon out. Get fucked by a computer, lady.
None of what you said means anything except for fuck like... Yeah, that's exactly... Yes,
that's all
exactly.
That's why
yeah.
we're in the Best Friends Club.
Right?
Sean.
That's what it was.
Yeah, that's what it was.
That thing that just happened.
Yeah.
So we decided to do... readings of Americana stories.
Yeah, old-timey Americana. Welcome, summer.
And I tried to research to find the best, like, the best rated or the best reviewed Americana stories, and I came down, like, between two. Most of the ones that people say are good, like, the best loved American short stories are horror. Like, it's Poe. It's Ambrose Bierce.
Burnside.
The other thing that came up was Casey at the Bat.
Mm.
Oh yeah.
Which I don't love.
Yeah, me neither.
I feel like it's very trite. It's very hokey. It's very
that's Americana.
Kitsch.
Everything's trite and hokey.
Well, we're not doing that one. I mean, maybe one of you guys are. I don't know.
Uh oh, I'm reading Casey at the Bat.
Shit.
I'm reading the sequel.
Shit.
Do you ever watch Tiny Toon Adventures?
Yes.
Do you remember when Buster did Buster at the Bat?
Yes.
Yeah.
And then he hit the home run at the end, and it was like so 90s. It was like, Tiny Buster has hit a home run. It was like, oh, wait, what? Like, that's not
the call of what happened.
Anyway, so I decided to read The Lottery by Shirley Jackson.
Oh, real upper.
Well, the thing is,
good work. Now we're going to be sad.
It's pretty true to America. I think it's kind of fitting.
Can we just play This Is America by Childish Gambino here?
Potentially. You're editing.
Am I, though?
We'll see.
So it's a little bit on the long side, so here we go. The Lottery by Shirley Jackson. And hopefully some of you out there have never heard this before, because it's a pretty good story.
I don't think I've ever heard it, which shouldn't be a surprise.
I'm shocked.
Shocked. I fell solo.
The morning of June 20- The morning of June 27th was clear and sunny, with the fresh warmth of a full summer day. The flowers were blossoming profusely, and the grass was richly green. The people of the village began to gather in the square, between the post office and the bank, around 10 o'clock. In some towns, there were so many people that the lottery took 2 days, and had to be started on June 20th. But in this village,
the lottery is people dying,
where there are only about 300 people, the whole lottery took less than 2 hours. So it could begin at 10 o'clock in the morning and still be through in time to allow the villagers to get home for dinner. The children assembled first, of course. Thank you, Frog. School was recently over for summer, and the feeling of liberty...
Wait, we read this already.
Did we?
Yeah, no, this already.
No, you're thinking of the rocket ship story that I read.
This isn't about rocket ships?
No.
No.
They do die.
The children assembled first, of course. School was recently over for summer, and the feeling of liberty sat uneasily on most of them. They tended to gather together quietly for a while before they broke into boisterous play, and their talk was still of the classroom and the teacher, of books and reprimands. Bobby Martin had already stuffed his pockets full of stones, and the other boys soon followed his example, selecting the smoothest and roundest stones. Bobby and Harry Jones and Dickie Delacroix... The villagers pronounced his name Delacroix, eventually made a great pile of stones in one corner of the square and guarded it against the raids of the other boys. The girls stood aside, talking among themselves, looking over their shoulders at the boys, and the very small children rolled in the dust or clung to the hands of their older brothers and sisters.
Don't touch me, kid. Soon,
the men began to gather, surveying their own children, speaking of planting and rain, tractors and taxes. They stood together, away from the pile of stones in the corner, and their jokes were quiet, and they smiled rather than laughed. The women, wearing faded house dresses and sweaters, came shortly after their menfolk. They greeted one another and exchanged bits of gossip as they went to join their husbands. Soon, the women, standing by their husbands, began to call to their children, and the children came reluctantly, having to be called 4 or 5 times. Bobby Martin ducked his mother's grasping hand and ran, laughing, back to the pile of stones. His father spoke up sharply, and Bobby came quickly and took his place between his father and his oldest brother. The lottery was conducted, as there were square dances, the teen club, and the Halloween program, by Mr. Summers. Mark Summers, Josh?
Probably.
Yeah.
He does, like, stupid shit.
Who had time and energy to devote to civic activities. He was a round-faced, jovial man, so same.
Sounds like him.
And he ran the coal business, same. And yeah, people were sorry for him because he had no children and his wife was a scold.
Sean, are you in same? The story?
When he arrived in the square, carrying the black wooden box, there was a murmur of conversation among the villagers. And he waved and called, "Little late today, folks." The postmaster, Mr. Graves, followed him, carrying a 3-legged stool. And the stool was put in the center of the square, and Mr. Summers set the black box on it. The villagers kept their distance, leaving a space between themselves and the stool. And when Mr. Summers said, "Some of you fellows want to give me a hand?" There was hesitation before two men, Mr. Martin and his oldest son, Baxter, came forward to hold the box steady on the stool while Mr. Summers stirred up the papers inside it.
Hmm.
The original paraphernalia for the lottery had been lost long ago, and the black box, now resting on the stool, had been put into use even before old man Warner, the oldest man in town, was born. Mr. Summers spoke frequently to the villagers about making a new box, but no one liked to upset even as much tradition as was represented by the black box. There was a story that the present box had been made with some pieces of the box that preceded it, the one that had been constructed when the first people settled down to make a village here. Every year, after the lottery, Mr. Summers began talking again about a new box, but every year the subject was allowed to fade off without anything being done. The black box grew shabbier each year. By now, it was no longer completely black, but splintered badly along one side to show the original wood color, and in some places, faded or stained.
Just like our morals.
You're picking up on it. Mr. Martin and his oldest son, Baxter, held the black box securely on the stool until Mr. Summers had stirred the papers thoroughly with his hand. Because so much of the ritual had been forgotten or discarded, Mr. Summer had been successful in having slips of paper substituted for the chips of wood that had been used for generations. Chips of wood, Mr. Summers had argued, had been all well and good when the village was tiny, but now that the population was more than 300 and likely to keep growing, it was necessary to use something that would fit more easily into the black box. The night before the lottery, Mr. Summers and Mr. Graves made up the slips of paper and put them in the box, and then it was taken to the safe of Mr. Summers' coal company and locked until Mr. Summers was ready to take it to the square the next morning. The rest of the year, the box was put away, sometimes one place, sometimes another. It had spent 1 year in Mr. Graves' barn and another year underfoot in the post office, and sometimes it was set on the shelf in the Martin grocery and left there.
Damn, that place.
There was a great deal of fussing to be done before Mr. Summers declared the lottery open. There were the lists make up of heads of families, heads of households in each family, members of each household in each family. There was the proper swearing in of Mr. Summers by the postmaster as the official of the lottery. At one time, some people remembered there had been a recital of some sort performed by the official of the lottery, a perfunctory, tuneless chant that had been rattled off duly each year. Some people believe that the official of the lottery used to stand just so when he said or sang it. Others believe that he was supposed to walk among the people. But years and years ago...
Just like the flag!
You're getting it. But years and years ago, this part of the ritual had been allowed to lapse.
Like the freshman English class for Josh.
Hey, I was good at freshman English class.
It's hard to say.
I feel like you would have read this by now.
Red leather, yellow leather.
That's not English class, that's diction. There had also been a ritual salute which the official of the lottery had had to use in addressing each person who came up to draw from the box. But this also had changed with time, until now it was felt necessary only for the official to speak each person approaching. Mr. Summers was very good at this, in his clean white shirt and blue jeans, with one hand resting carelessly on the black box. He seemed very proper and important, as he talked interminably to Mr. Graves and the Martins. Just as Mr. Summers finally let off talking and turned to the assembled villagers, Mrs. Hutchinson came hurriedly along the path to the square, her sweater thrown over her shoulders and slid into place in the back of the crowd. "Clean forgot what day it was," she said to Mrs. Delacroix, who stood next to her, and they laughed softly. "Thought my old man was still back stacking wood," Mrs. Hutchinson went on, "and then I looked out the window and the kids was gone. And then I remembered it was the 27th and came a-running." She dried her hands on her apron, and Mrs. Delacroix said, "You're in time, though. They're still talking away up there." Mrs. Hutchinson craned her neck to see through the crowd and found her husband and children standing near the front. She tapped Mrs. Delacroix on the arm as a farewell and began to make her way through the crowd. The people separated good-humoredly to let her through. Two or three people said, in voices just loud enough to be heard across the crowd, "Here comes your Mrs. Hutchinson," and,
"Bill, she made it after all."
Mrs. Hutchinson reached her husband, and Mr. Summers, who had been waiting, said cheerfully,
"Thought you were going to have to get on without you, Tessie."
Mrs. Hutchinson said, grinning, Wouldn't have me leave my dishes in the sink now, would you, Joe?" And soft laughter ran through the crowd.
Damn, comedy was so easy back then.
As people stirred back into position after Mrs. Hutchinson's arrival.
"Well now," Mr. Summers said soberly, "guess we better get started, get this over with so we can get back to work. Anybody ain't here?" "Dunbar," several people said. "Dunbar, Dunbar."
The guy from Dancing with Wolves?
Mr. Summers...
Yes.
Mr. Summers consulted his list.
"Clyde Dunbar?" he said. "That's right. He broke his leg, hasn't he? Who's drawing for him?"
"Me, I guess,"
a woman said, and Mr. Summers turned to look at her.
"Wife draws for husband,"
Mr. Summers said. "Don't you have a grown boy to do it for you, Janie?" Although Mr. Summers and everyone else...
It was very Quentin Tarantino.
...in the village knew the answer perfectly well.
The voice.
It was the business of the official of the lottery to ask us questions formally. Mr. Summers waited while an expression of polite interest while Mrs. Dunbar answered.
Horace ain't not but 16 yet,
Mrs. Dora said regretfully. Imagine that was more regretful in my voice.
Guess I got a feeling for the old man this year.
They've been married a long time, calling each other old man, old right, lady.
Mr. Summers said. He made a note on the list he was holding. Then he asked, Watson boy drawing this year? A tall boy in the crowd raised his hand.
Here,
he said.
I'm drawing for my mother and me.
Where's this kid from?
He blinked his eyes nervously. I'm running out of voices. And ducked his head as several voices in the crowd said things like, Good fellow, Lack. And she glad to see your mother's got a man to do it.
Michael Caine is there.
Do your Beetlejuice voice. Oh, do Beetlejuice.
Well, Mr. Summers said, guess it's everyone. I'm so lost in my voices. Old man want to make it?
Here,
a voice said. And Mr. Summers nodded. A sudden hush fell on the crowd as Mr. Summers cleared his throat and looked at the list.
Already?
He called. I've already done this guy's voice. I forget what it was. So, let's do Beetlejuice.
Now I'll read the names. Hit the families first. And the man can come up and take a paper out of the box.
That's so good.
Keep the paper folded in your hand without looking at it until everyone has a turn. Everything clear?
It's like the opposite of a funny story.
The people had done it so many times that they only listened to the directions. Most of them were quiet, wetting their lips. Not looking around. Then, Mr. Summers raised one hand high and said, Adams? A man disengaged himself from the crowd and came forward.
Hi. Steve?
Mr. Summers said, and Mr. Adams said,
Hi, it's me, Spider-Man.
Hi, Joe.
They grinned at one another humorously and nervously. Then Mr. Adams reached into the black box and took out a folded paper. He held it firmly by one corner as he turned and went hastily back to his place in the crowd, where he stood a little apart from the family, not looking down.
Alan,
Mr. Summers said.
Anderson, Betham.
Seems like there's no time at all between lotteries anymore,
Mrs. Delacroix said to Mrs. Graves in the back row.
Seems like we only got through one last week. Time sure goes fast,
Mrs. Graves said.
Clark, Delacroix.
There goes my man,
Mrs. Delacroix said. She held her breath while her husband went forward.
Dunbar.
Mr. Summers said, and Mrs. Dunbar went steadily to the box, while one of the women said,
Go on, Jeannie!
And another one said, There she goes!
We're next,
Mrs. Graves said. She watched while Mrs. Graves came around from the side of the box and greeted Mr. Summers gravely and selected a piece of paper from the box. By now, all through the crowd, there were men holding the small folded papers in their large hands, turning them over and over nervously. Mrs. Dunbar and her two sons stood together. Mrs. Dunbar holding the slip of paper.
Harkbert? Hutchinson? Get up there, Bill,
Mrs. Hutchinson said, and the people near her laughed.
Jones?
They do say, Mr. Adams said to old man Warner, who stood next to him, that over in the North Village, they're talking of giving up the lottery.
Old man Warner snorted. Pack of crazy fools, he said.
Listening to the young folks, nothing's good enough for them. Next thing you know, they want to be back to living in caves. Nobody work anymore. Live that way for a while. Used to be saying about a lottery in June, corn be heavy soon. First thing you know, we'd be eating stewed chickweed and acorns.
I don't know what the fuck that is.
I can relate.
Yeah, chickweeds, huh? Yum or bad.
There's always been a lottery, he added petulantly. Bad enough to see young Summers up there joking with everybody.
Shit.
Some places have already quit lotteries, Mrs. Adams said.
No trouble in that, old man Warner said stoutly. Pack of young fools.
I'm sorry, nothing but trouble in that, old man Warner said stoutly. Pack of young fools.
Martin?
And Bobby watched his father go forward.
Overdyke? Percy?
All over the map with these accents, you guys.
It's okay.
I wish they'd hurry, Mrs. Dunbar said to her older son. I wish they'd hurry. They're almost through, her son said. You get ready to run tell Dad, Mrs. Dunbar said. Mr. Summers called forward and then stepped precisely and selected a slip from the box. Then he called, Warner?
77th year I've been in the lottery, old man Warner said as he went through the crowd.
77th time.
Watson, the tall boy came awkwardly through the crowd. Someone said, "Don't be nervous, Jack." And Mr. Summer said, "Take your time, son. Your time, son." Zanini? After that, there was a long pause, a breathless pause, until Mr. Summers, holding his slip of paper in the air, said, "All right, fellows." For a minute, no one moved, and then all the slips of paper were opened. Suddenly, all the women began to speak at once, saying, "Who is it? Who's got it? Is it the Dunbars? Is it the Watsons?" Then the voices began to say, "It's Hutchinson. It's Bill. Bill Hutchinson's got it." "Go tell your father, Mrs. Dunbar," said to her older son. People began to look around to see the Hutchinsons. Bill Hutchinson was standing quiet, staring down at the paper in his hand. Suddenly, Tessie Hutchinson shouted to Mr. Summers, "You didn't give him time to take any paper he wanted." "Time enough to take any paper he wanted. I saw you. It wasn't fair." "Be a good sport, Tessie," Mrs. Delacroix said. And Mr. Graves said, "All of us took the same chance." "Shut up, Tessie," Bill Hutchinson said.
"Damn Tessie."
"Well, everyone," Mr. Summers said, "I'm not Beetlejuice anymore." "That was done pretty fast, and now we gotta be hurrying a little more to get done in time." He consulted his next list. "Bill," he said, "you draw for the Hutchinson family. You got any other households in the Hutchinsons?" "There's Don and Eva," Mrs. Hutchinson yelled. "Make them take their chance."
"He said I'm next."
"Daughters draw with their husbands' families, Tessie," Mr. Summers said gently. "You know that as well as anyone else." "It wasn't fair," Tessie said. "Guess not, Joe," Bill Hutchinson said regretfully. "My daughter draws with her husband's family. That's only fair. And I've got no other family except the kids." "Then as far as drawing for families is concerned, it's you," Mr. Summers said in explanation. "And as far as drawing for households is concerned, that's you too. Right?" "Right," Bill Hutchinson said. "How many kids, Bill?" Mr. Summers asked formally. "3. There's Bill Jr. and Nancy and little Dave and Tessie and me." "All right, then," Mr. Summers said. "Harry, you got their tickets back?" Mr. Graves nodded and held up the slips of paper. "Put them in the box, then," Mr. Summers directed. "Then take Bill's, put it in." "I think we ought to start over," Mrs. Hutchinson said, quietly as she could. "Tell you, it wasn't fair. You didn't give him time enough to choose. Everybody saw that." Mr. Graves had selected the 5 slips and put them in the box, and he dropped all the papers but those onto the ground, where the breeze caught them and lifted them off. "Listen, everybody," Mrs. Hutchinson was saying to the people around her. "Ready, Bill?" Mr. Summers said, and Bill Hutchinson, with one quick glance around at his wife and children, nodded. "Remember," Mr. Summers said, "take the slips and keep them folded until each person has taken one. Harry, you help little Dave." Mr. Graves took the hand of the little boy, who came willingly with him, up to the box. "Take a paper out of the box, Davy," Mr. Summers said. Davy put his hand into the box and laughed. "Take just one paper," Mr. Summers said. "Harry, you hold it for him." Mr. Graves took the child's hand and removed the folded paper from the tight fist and held it where little Dave stood next to him and looked up to him wonderingly. "Nancy next," Mr. Summers said. Nancy was 12, and her school friends breathed heavily as she went forward, switching her skirt, and took a slip daintily from the box. "Bill Jr.," Mr. Summers said, and Billy, his face red and his feet over-large, same, near knocked the box over as he got a paper out. "Tessie," Mr. Summers said. She hesitated for a minute, looking around defiantly, and then she set her lips and went up to the box. She snatched a paper out and held it behind her. "Bill," Mr. Summers said, and Bill Hutchinson reached into the box and felt around, bringing his hand out at last with a slip of paper in it. The crowd was quiet. A girl whispered, "I hope it's not Nancy." And the sound of the whisper reached the edges of the crowd. "It's not the way it used to be," Old Man Warner said clearly. "People ain't the way they used to be." "All right," Mr. Summers said. "Open the papers, Harry. You open little Dave's." Mr. Graves opened the slip of paper, and there was a general sigh through the crowd as he held it up and everyone could see it was blank. Nancy and Bill Jr. opened theirs at the same time, and both beamed and laughed, turning around to the crowd and holding their slips of paper above their heads. "Tessie," Mr. Summers said. There was a pause, and Mr. Summers looked at Bill Hutchinson, and Bill unfolded the paper and showed it. It was blank. "It's Tessie's," Mr. Summers said, and his voice was hushed. "Show us her paper, Bill." Bill Hutchinson went over to his wife and forced the slip of paper out of her hand. It had a black spot on it. The black spot Mr. Summers had made the night before with a heavy pencil in the coal company office. Bill Hutchinson held it up, and there was a stir in the crowd. "All right, folks," Mr. Summers said. Let's finish this quickly. Although the villagers had forgotten the ritual and lost the original black box, they still remembered to use the stones. The pile of stones the boys had made earlier was ready. There were stones on the ground with the blowing scraps of paper that had come out of the box. Delacroix selected with a stone so large she'd picked it up with both hands and turned to Mrs. Dunbar. "Come on," she said. "Hurry up." Mrs. Dunbar had small stones in both hands, and she said, gasping for breath, "I can't run at all. You'll have to go ahead, and I'll catch up with you." The children had stones already, and someone had given Davy Hutchinson a few pebbles. Tessie Hutchinson was in the center of a cleared space by now, and she held her hands out desperately as the villagers moved in on her. "It isn't fair," she said, as a stone hit her on the side of the head. Old Man Warner was saying, come on, everyone." Steve Adams was in the was in the front of the crowd of villagers, with Mrs. Graves right behind him. "It isn't fair. It isn't right," Mrs. Hutchinson screamed. And then they were upon her.
America! That's a fucked up story, but I really liked it. It's a good short story.
Had you really never heard that?
I never heard it before.
It's a good Marilyn Manson video.
It is a good Marilyn Manson video.
What's that video? The Beautiful People?
No, it's,
That song.
We'll take a break. Welcome back to episode 104 of Cracking the Spine. Sean.
I'm Zane.
I'm Josh.
You guys are tired of hearing my voice, so in continuing with our...
Yes, we are.
...tribute to Americana, and, well, I picked the lottery because it's Memorial Day, and we memorialize dead things, so...
We do. Also alive things, I guess.
You don't... No, that's not what memorials are for.
My grandfather has to stand up and do the whole army song shit. They play like
when the in the army,
whatever the
you can join
is.
Your fellow man in the army.
That's the song
from the halls of the army.
Gryffindor,
not Slytherin, eh?
Josh, what are you reading?
God bless America,
America.
That's but name, it's an emergency.
I'm reading a story that I definitely totally picked on my own, and Zane didn't pick for me.
Yes,
to
because
read.
Because you are a competent adult and don't need your handheld.
That is true.
At every turn to do any everything.
I am not a tremendous failure.
No, no, nobody said that. No one said that you're a tremendous failure.
My baby.
I'm reading The Foist Woman in Nevada by Mr. Samuel Clemens, a.k.a. Mark Twain.
Oh, where's the finger puppet? Oh, it doesn't matter. Audio podcast. Yeah. Here, it's right here.
I've got to remember the voice. We were having trouble with the voice earlier. Okay, here we got... Old inhabitants tell how in a Sweden, Nevada camp... The news went abroad early in the morning that a woman
oily. You would have...
Oily in the morning. A woman has come. Come.
That's not his Frank Sinatra impression.
The miners had seen a calico dress hanging out in the wagon down... Now I, like, totally lost it. Down by a camping ground.
I know how that goes, dude.
Sign of emigrants.
Do your Beetlejuice.
Sign of emigrants. Over the Great Plains. I don't have a voice. Everybody went down there, and a shout went up when an actual bona fide dress.
There it is. That's it.
He sounds like Foghorn Leghorn.
No, he's got it now. He's got it.
Fluttering in the wind. The male emigrant.
He has to shake his head.
Was visible. That's what it is. It's the head shake. The miner said, "Fetch her out." He said, "It's my wife, gentlemen. She's sick.
Oh shit, Borat.
We have been robbed of money, provisions, everything by the Indians. We want to rest. Fetch her out. We gotta see you." "But gentlemen, it's my wife. The poor thing, she fetch her out." He fetched her out. It's quotes. And they swung their hats and sent up three rousing cheers, and they crowded around and gazed at her.
There it is. There it is.
and touched a dress and listened to a voice with the look of men who listened to a memory rather than a present reality. And then they collected $2,500 in gold and gave it to the man and swung their hats again and gave three more cheers and went home satisfied. Thank you, Mark Twain. That was a very pointless story.
They pull a dead body out?
No, they, like, helped to, like, they help him.
She died, right? Like, that's what happened?
They helped the guy.
So we have two really American stories!
Yeah! Built on the blood of the people who are poor!
But they get you 2,500 gold!
There's your,
three cheers.
Here you go. Hip hip hooray.
Josh selected this story for himself because of its length.
Yeah. I like reading short stories. If we're going short, it's short.
Listen, when I selected the lottery, in my head it was shorter than it was.
Oh, it wasn't a dig at you. It was a dig at Josh's reading ability.
Yeah, I did pretty good.
You did all right.
I can read. I just don't.
We need to bring the dramatic reading back, like, on a weekly basis.
A weekly? Every show every is a dramatic show? Reading?
No.
The show only comes back on a week.
We used to do the end of every episode after the three acts, we would always do a dramatic reading. Always.
Mm, yeah, you're right.
Totally remember. We did the Dinosaur Lords.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Yes.
Like, the end of every episode was a short reading
from a book. I totally remember this thing that I was a part of.
Yeah, it absolutely...
No, I'm being serious.
Texted you guys about this, five times yesterday.
He was right about fucking I rolled Jones over here. Jesus.
I told you.
He took his glasses off. That's how hard he rolled his eyes. His glasses flew off of his face.
It's true.
I need a Tums.
His glasses aren't there.
I can't pause this because I can't see.
We're going to take a break.
Hey, everybody. It's episode 104, the Memorial Day episode of Cracking the Spine.
Happy Memorial Day!
That's the song it's going to put here.
What the hell is that?
It's a Fife song from the war.
Fife Dog from the Tribe Called Quest?
Fife Dog from the Tribe
Called. The 5-foot assassin?
Yep.
Fife Diddog?
Yep, Gen X words.
Hey, man, he died.
Did he die?
Yeah.
When?
A couple of years ago.
Really? Ah, that does suck.
Do you remember?
No, I do remember that. Yeah, I do remember that.
Yeah, it was kind of a thing.
Yeah, I do remember.
All right, so I did my reading. Probably the best. Josh did his reading. Not bad. Not bad.
That's as good as it gets for me, really.
So, Zane.
Yes.
What do you got?
A story.
Did you pick one? Or are you just, like, gonna just find one, like, as we're speaking? Are you Googling right now on your Snapchats?
Yeah, she's Googling.
Yes. On this piece of paper that I printed out.
They can't see it, you guys.
That's why I'm narrating.
Damn.
You're contradicting. You're no-butting. You're not yes-ending.
I don't care.
Okay.
This is going well. All
right.
I'm done. Josh, you ask her what she's reading.
Zane, what are you reading?
Nobody cares.
Someone cares.
I care. I love
you.
No,
go away.
No, I'm hugging you.
It's a podcast. They can't tell.
I said I'm hugging her. I'm narrating.
Zane, what are you reading?
I am reading All on a Summer's Night. By Ray Bradbury.
For fuck's sake! You fucking lied!
You liar!
You specifically told us. We asked you point blank if
she
you were
gonna... lied to us!
God damn it, bring it home, Zane. Hit another fucking home run, Reese Hopkins.
I don't know who that is.
He's a Phillies guy.
I don't care.
True, she doesn't.
I'm wearing a hat. It's a podcast, I can't see.
You're getting too big for this. Grandpa gave Doug a toss towards the blazing chandelier. The boarders sat laughing with knives and forks at hand. Then Doug, 10 years old, was caught and popped in his chair, and Grandma tapped his bowl with a steaming spoonful of soup. The crackers crunched like snow when he bit them. The cracker salt glittered like tiny diamonds. And there, at the far end of the table, with her gray eyes always down to watch her hand stir her coffee with a spoon or break her gingerbread and lay on the butter, was Miss Leonora Welks, with whom men never sat on backyard swings or walked through the town ravine on summer nights.
Is that a sarcasm?
There was Miss Leonora, whose eyes watched out the window as summer couples drifted by on the darkening sidewalks night after night, and Douglas felt his heart squeeze tight. "Evening, Miss Leonora," he called. "Evening, Douglas." She looked up past the steaming mounds of food, and the boarders turned their heads a moment before bowing again to their rituals. Oh, Miss Welks, he thought, Miss Welks. And he wanted to stab every man at the table with a silver fork for not blinking their eyes at Miss Welks when she asked for the butter. They always handed her things to their right while still conversing with people on their left. The chandelier drew more attention than Miss Welks. Isn't it pretty, they said. Look at it sparkle, they cried. But they did not know Miss Welks as he knew her. There as many facets to her as any chandelier, and if you went about it right, she could be set laughing, and it was like stirring the Chinese hanging crystals in the wind on the summer night porch, all tinkling in melody. No, Miss Welks was cobweb and dust to them, and Douglas almost died in his chair, fastening his eyes upon her all through the soup and salad.
I just died in my chair tonight.
Oh, baby, baby, you got it bad when Miss Welks comes in, and you wanna fuck her right up.
Two different songs right there.
It's working for me. Now the three young ladies came laughing down the stairs, late, like a troop of Orioles. They always came last to the table, as if they were actresses making entrance through to the frayed blue velvet portieres.
That's Milk's favorite cookie, by the way. Oreos.
They would hold each other by the shoulders, looking into each other's faces, telling themselves if their cheeks were pink enough, or their hair ringed up tight, or their eyelashes dyed with spit and color enough, then they would pause, straighten their hems, and enter to something like applause from the male boarders. Evening Tom, Jim, Bill. Evening John, Peter. The five would tongue their food over into their cheeks, leap up, and draw out chairs for the young bells. Everyone laughed until the chandelier cried with pain. Look what I got! Look what I got! Look at mine! The three ladies held up gifts which they had saved to open at table. It was the 4th of July, and on any day of the year that was in any way special, they pulled the ribbons off gifts and cried. Oh, you shouldn't have done it. They even got gifts on Memorial Day. That was how it was.
Fucking Zane picked a goddamn story that has the words Memorial Day in it.
Washington's, yeah, Jefferson's, Columbus Day, Friday the 13th.
It's got all the holidays. It was quite a joke. The spooky
Arbor Day.
It's just I can read it on any occasion.
Grandparents' Day.
Once they got gifts on a day that wasn't any kind of day at all, with notes printed on them.
Yeah,
saying,
she literally hit them all. She just Monday, hit them all.
They talked about that particular incident for 6 months after. Now there was a crisp rattling as they cut the ribbons with their fingernails, which flashed red, and far away at the end of the tunnel of people sat Miss Leonora Welks, still inching her food, but slowing down and at last, and her fork came to rest, and she watched the gifts exposed to the crystalline light. Perfume, with Old Glory on the box. Bath powder in the shape of a pinwheel. Candy done up in 10-inch salutes. Everyone said how nice it was. Miss Leonora Welks said, oh, how nice that is. A moment later, Miss Welks said, I'm all done. It was a fine meal. Don't you want any dessert? Asked Grandma. I'm choke full. And Miss Welks, smiling, glided from the room. Smell, cried one young lady, waving the open perfume under the men's noses. Ah, said everyone.
Ah, perfume. The only thing we use to cover up our stench.
Douglas hit the screen door like a bullet to a target, and before it slammed, he had taken 68 steps across the cool green lawn in his bare feet.
Yo, slow down, Douglas!
Money jingled in his pocket, the remains of his firecracker savings, and quite a remains, too. Now he thudded his bare feet on the warm summer twilight cement across the street to press his nose on Mrs. Singer's store window.
Is he a kid?
Yes, he's 10. It was in the first part of the story, Josh.
Oh, I was probably thinking about how you lied to me.
To see the devils laid in red round rows, the torpedoes and sawdust, the 10-inch salutes that could toss your head in the trees like a football, the 9-inchers that could bang a can to the sun, and the fire balloons, so rare and beautiful, like withered red, white, and blue butterflies, their delicate silk wings folded, ready to be lit and gassed with warm air later, and sent up into the summer night among the stars.
Yo, I got a 9-incher that could bang a can into the sun.
I knew you guys were going to
I was giving. I was giving you your space.
I tried to roll past it.
You did. And then here we are.
Hard to get by a 9-incher.
There were so many things to pack your pockets with. And as yet he stood there, counting the money, 10, 20, 40, $1.70, precariously saved during a long year of mowing lawns and clipping hedges.
By the way, in the time this story was written, that's like $750,000.
The story was written in 1950.
He should have gone to college for that.
He did go to college for that.
He turned
on the GI Bill.
I was going to say the GI Bill.
He turned and looked back at Grandma's house.
He's now living on Social Security.
Up in the little green cupola where the window was shut in the hottest weather, the shades half drawn. Miss Welks' room. In half an hour, the kids would come like a summer shower, their feet raining on the pavement, their hands full of explosions, little adhesive turbans on their burned thumbs, smelling of brimstone and punk, to run him off in fairy circles where they wave the magical sparklers, tracing their names and their destinies in luminous firefly paths on the sultry evening air,
making great white
symbols that lingered in phosphorus after image, even if you looked down from your night bed at 3 a.m, remembering what a day and what an evening it had been. In half an hour, he would be fat with treasure, breast pockets bulging with torpedoes, his money gone. But now, he looked back and forth between the high room in Grandma's house and the store window full of dynamite wonders. How many nights in winter had he gone down to the Stone Public Library and seen Miss Welks there with the stamp pad at her elbow and the purple ink rubber stamper in her hand and the great book sections behind her? Good evening, Douglas. Evening, Miss Welks. Can I help you meet some new friends tonight? Yes, ma'am. I know a man named Longfellow, she said, or I know a man named Whittier. And that was it. It wasn't so much Miss Welks herself, it was the people she knew. On autumn nights when, for no reason, the library might be empty for hours on end, she would say, "Let me bring out Mr. Whittier." And she went back among the warm stacks of books and returned to sit under the green glass shade, opening the book to meet the season, while Douglas sat on a stool looking up at her, as her lips moved, and, half of the time, she didn't even glance at the words, but could look away or close her eyes while she recited the poem about the pumpkin. Oh, fruit loved of childhood, the old days were calling, when wood grapes were purpling and brown nuts were falling, when ugly wild faces we carved in its skin, glaring out through the dark with a candle within. And Douglas would walk home, tall and enchanted. Or on silver winter evenings, when he and the wind blew wide the library door and dust stirred on the farthest counters, and magazines turned their pages unaided in the vast empty rooms, then what more particularly apt than a good friend of Miss Welk's? Mr. Robert Frost, what a name for winter. His poem about stopping by the woods on a winter evening to watch the woods fill up with snow.
I read that one.
I didn't.
And in the summer, only last night, Mr. Whittier again, on a hot night in July that kept the people at home lying on their porches, the library like a great bread oven, there under the green grass lamp. Blessings on thee, little man, barefoot boy with cheeks of tan. Every morn shall lead thee through fresh baptisms of the dew.
Is that what those lamps are called? Those green lamps? With the green shade?
What?
Is that what he's referring to?
Yes.
That's what they're called, green grass lamps?
No, I think he's describing the color.
Oh, the color. I thought that maybe was, like, the name of them.
No.
Because I always wondered why they use those, and apparently it's for the paper.
Yeah.
Would get, and, like, the light in the old-timeys would hurt your eyes. They use, like, a certain kind of, like super incandescent light back when, like, light bulbs were, like, new. And go ahead.
That was adorable.
What?
It was an adorable exchange the two of you just had. The podcast viewers will not be able to see it because it's not a viewing.
As we've gone over before.
Mm-hmm.
And Miss Welks's face there, an oval, with her cobweb graying hair and her plainness, would be enchanted, color risen to her cheeks and wetness to her lips, and the light from the reflection on the book pages shining her eyes and coloring her hair to a brightness. In winter, he trudged home through icelands of magic, in summer through bakery winds of sorcery, the seasons given substance by the readings of Miss Welks, who knew so many people and introduced them in due time to Douglas, Mr. Poe and Mr. Sandberg and Miss Amy Lowell and Mr. Shakespeare. The screen door opened under his hand. Mrs. Singer, he said, have you got any perfume? The gift lay at the top of the stairs, tilted against her door. Supper had been early, over at 6 o'clock. There was the warm lull now before the extravagant evening. Downstairs, you could hear the tinkling of plates lifted to their kitchen wall racks. Douglas, at the furthest bend of the stairs, half hid in the attic door shadows, waited for Miss Welks to twist her brass doorknob, waited to see the gift drop at her feet, unsigned, anonymous, sparkling with tape and gold stars. At last, the door opened. The gift fell. Miss Welks looked down at it as if she was standing on the edge of a cliff she had never guessed was there before. She looked in all directions, slowly, and bent to pick it up. She didn't open it, but stood in the doorway, holding the gift in her hands for a long time. He heard her move inside and set the gift on a table. But there was no rattle of paper. She was looking at the gift, the wrapping, the tape, the stars, and not touching it. Oh, Miss Welks, Miss Welks, he wanted to cry. Half an hour later, there she was on the front porch, seated with her neat hands folded, and watching the door. It was the summer evening ritual, the people on the porches, in the swings, on the figured pillows, the women talking and sewing, the men smoking, the children in the idle groupings on the steps. But this was early, the town porches still simmering from the day, the echoes only temporarily allayed, the Civil War of Independence afternoon muffled for an hour in the sounds of poured lemonade and scraped dishes. But here, the only person on the street porches, alone, was Miss Leonora Welks, her face pink instead of gray, flushed, her eyes watching the door, her body tensed forward. Douglas saw her from the tree where he hung in silent vigilance. He did not say hello, she did not see him there, and the hour passed into deeper twilight. Within the house, the sounds of preparation grew intense and furious. Phones rang, feet ran up and down the avalanche of stairs, the three bells giggled, bath doors slammed, and then out and down the front steps went the three young ladies, one at a time, a man on her arm. Each time the door swung, Miss Welks would lean forward, smiling widely, and each time she sank back as the girls appeared in floaty green dresses and blew away like thistle down on the darkening avenues, laughing up at the men. That left only Mr. Britz and Mr. Jarrick, who lived upstairs from Miss Welks. You could hear them whistling idly at their mirrors, and through the open windows you could see them finger their ties. Miss Welks leaned over the porch geraniums to peer up at their windows.
Don't wash your hands.
Her heart pumping in her face, it seemed, making it heart-shaped and colorful. She was looking for the man who had left the gift. And then Douglas
It's the kid! Over. It's the little kid!
He almost fell from the tree. Miss Welks had tapped her ears and neck with drops of perfume, many, many bright drops of summer night, 97 cents a bottle. And she was sitting where the warm wind might blow this scent to whoever stepped out on the porch. It's like $75,000. This would be her way of saying, I got your gift. Well, it was me, Miss Welks, screamed Douglas, silently, and hung in the tree, cold as ice. Good evening, Mr. Jarrick, said Miss Welks, half rising. Evening. Mr. Jarrick sniffed in the doorway and looked over at her. Have a nice evening. He went whistling down the steps. That left only Mr. Britz with his straw hat cocked over one eye, humming. Here I am, said Miss Welks, rising, certain that this must be the man, the last one in the house. There you are, said Mr. Britz, blinking. Hey, you smell good. I never knew you used that scent.
Hey there, Goily!
He leered at her.
Chicky girl, you don't smell like the death of death anymore.
Someone gave me a gift. Well, that's fine. And Mr. Britz did a little dance going down the porch steps, his cane jauntily flung over his shoulder.
Mr. Britz is a moron.
See you later, Miss W. He marched off.
I think Mr. Britz is going to a different club tonight.
Miss Welks sat, and Douglas hung in the cooling tree. The kitchen sounds were fading. In a moment, Grandma would come out, bringing her pillow and a bottle of mosquito oil. Grandpa would cut the end off a long cigar and puff it to kill his own particular insects, and the aunts and uncles would arrive for the Independence Evening event at the Spalding House, also, the Festival of Fire, the Shooting Stars.
Boarding houses are weird.
Roman candles, yeah. So diligently held by Grandpa, looking like Julius Caesar gone to flesh, standing with great dignity on the dark summer lawn, directing the setting off of fountains of red fire and pinwheels of sizzle and smoke, while everyone, as if to the order of some celestial doctor, opened their mouths and said, ah. Their faces burned into quick colors by blue, red, yellow, white flashes of sky bomb among the cloudy stairs.
Oh my god, what a sentence. Oh my god, what a fucking sentence structure. Think about that. A celestial god, we all say, ah, my, I'm sorry. Sorry, Zane.
The house windows would jingle with concussion.
Kind of.
And Miss Welks would sit among the strange people, the scent of perfume evaporating during the evening hours until it was gone, and only the sad, wet smell of punk and sulfur would remain. The children screamed by on the dim street now, calling for Douglas, but, hidden, he did not answer. He felt in his pocket for the remaining $1.50. The children ran away into the night.
That's like $75 million.
I'm glad you're here for the conversion
rate. It's like Google
sock. Douglas swung and dropped. He stood by the porch steps. Miss Welks? She glanced up. Yes? Now that the time had come, he was afraid. Suppose she refused. Suppose she was embarrassed and ran up to lock her door and never came out again. Tonight, he said, there's a swell show at the Elite Theater. Harold Lloyd and Welcome Danger. The show Harold starts at Lloyd? 8 o'clock, and afterwards we'll have a chocolate sundae at the Midnight Drugstore, open until 11:45.
I'm gonna ham it up!
I'll go change clothes.
This is a talkie, people! Would it kill you to throw a pie or two?
She looked down at him and didn't speak. Then she opened the door and went up the stairs. Miss Welks, he cried. It's all right, she said. Run and put your shoes on. It was 7:30, the porch filling with people, when Douglas emerged in his dark suit with a blue tie, his hair wet with water, and his feet in the hot, tight shoes. Why, Douglas, the aunts and uncles and Grandma and Grandpa cried. Aren't you staying for the fireworks? No. and he looked at the fireworks laid out so beautifully crisp and smelling of powder, the pinwheels and sky bombs and the fire balloons, three of them, folded like moss in their tissue wings, those balloons he loved most dearly of all, for they were like a summer night dream going up quietly, breathlessly on the still high air, away and away to far lands, glowing and breathing light as long as you could see them. Yes, the fire balloons, those especially he would miss while seated in the Elite Theater tonight. There was a whisper, the screen door stood wide, and there was Miss Welks. Good evening, Mr. Spaulding, she
balls
said to
Douglas. Balls ass naked.
Good evening, Miss Welks, he said. She was dressed in a gray suit no one had ever seen before, neat and fresh, with her hair up under a summer straw hat, and standing there in the dim porch light, she was like the carved goddess on the great marble library clock come to life. Shall we go, Mr. Spaulding? And Douglas walked her down the steps. Have a good time, said everyone. Douglas, called Grandfather. Yes, sir. Douglas, said Grandfather, after a pause, holding his cigar in his hand. I'm saving one of the fire balloons. I'll be up when you get home. We'll light her together and send her up. How's that sound, eh? Swell, said Douglas. Good night, boy. Grandpa waved him quietly on. Good night, sir. And he took Miss Leonora Welks down the street, over the sidewalks of the summer evening, and they talked about Mr. Longfellow and Mr. Whittier and Mr. Poe all the way to the Elite Theater.
And remember when Zane lied about not stealing the show again by doing a fucking Ray Bradbury reading?
So this kid scores?
It's like that movie Big when Elizabeth Perkins has sex with a 12-year-old boy.
Except it's totally legal because it's 1950.
We're okay with it.
Nobody cared.
Yeah.
They're not having sex.
No, he likes her because she's the librarian.
Listen. When Ernest Klein writes the sequel to that story,
hey,
they're totally banging.
Miss Welks, there's a Back to the Future marathon.
We found a Zoltar machine at the theater in between the Harold Lloyd movie.
I can finally be big, and then we can suck each other's tits.
And she says, I think that's the greatest thing ever because all I want is boy sex from boys.
Also, I am not aware, but I think that's what sex is. Just tit sucking, right?
Happy Memorial Day!
Fuck you, Ernest Klein.
Check them out. Books. Check them out. At your library.
Part-time,